Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Monday, July 9th, 2010. This is Sam Minter. Once again, I have Yvonne Bo with me. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
So, you know, let's get started right away. The one thing that we talked about a little bit about last week, or we'll undoubtedly be talking about again. Well, maybe not. Who knows? Maybe the issue's done with. The iPhone 4 and the stupid reception issue. On last week's show, you mentioned, hey, you know, your brother has one. You tried it out. It's bullshit. But, you know, Steve Jobs, a couple days ago, had, you know, there was a press conference. They were, like, addressing this issue. And, you know, basically said, you know, they brought in a bunch of stuff that basically said, look, you know, we really do have pretty good reception. First of all, a lot of people were hoping or expecting that they would come on stage and say, you're right, we're screwed up, we're sorry, blah, 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 blah. They didn't quite do that. They very much defended and said, look, you know, there's a lot of criticism here, but this kind of stuff happens to every phone out there on the market. It's not really that bad. You know, and blah, blah, blah. And by the way, if you're still bitching about it, we'll give you a free bumper or a free case. And if you still don't like it after that, return the phone. We'll waive the restocking fee or whatever. You have 30 days. Just bring back the damn phone.
Can I just say that I met a number of people that own the phones and none of them have the intention of returning the phone, or none of them, actually the real users that I met, are actually complaining about the reception of the phone. I actually used an iPhone 4 over the last few days because my brother has one, and my brother went with me to San Francisco. We were there all week. I tried to get that damn phone to drop a call doing what they were saying. No dice. And we were in areas of poor reception. Okay, because we were way the hell out of the city. Okay, and we tried our asses off. We kept going. Okay, put the finger there. Okay, just wrap it. Just do it. Honestly, if it's happening, which according to even Steve admits it's happening, it's obviously not happening to every phone, and it's not enough that it's causing a huge change in how well you are.
And the stats he gave. There are a couple interesting stats that Steve Jobs gave in the press conference. One is, the complaints they've been getting are about 0.5% of
right.
iPhone buyers have called to complain about this issue. Now, mm-hmm. The one thing I'll say is that is sort of you have to read that carefully, because obviously most people don't, even if you have the problem, you may not call in to bitch about it. You may just be
but
like,
relevant stat that he gave was probably
3G?
But exactly.
So
yes.
Compared to the 3GS, the return rate is lower.
Yes.
So what that is saying is, it doesn't necessarily say that this problem specifically is better or worse on this phone versus that phone versus whatever, but it's saying that even if there is a problem here, it's compensated for enough that people like it anyway and they're not going to return the damn thing. So there's a trade-off here. And, you know, one of the things they showed as well, and Steve didn't specifically call this off as a trade-off, but if you aren't touching it in this way, this thing has better reception than any of the other versions of the iPhone. So if you do touch it in this way, you get a little bit of a loss, whatever. It's a trade-off that they did. Now, another interesting stat they gave that I read some press on after the fact is that the number of dropped calls per 100 calls.
Right.
Steve put it very interestingly. He said it is less than one additional dropped call per 100.
Correct.
Which makes it sound very small.
Mm-hmm.
However, the dropped call rate for the iPhone 3GS is apparently around 1 per 100. So if it's one more per 100, that makes it 2 per 100, which is actually doubling the dropped call rate.
Okay.
Now, having said that, it's still 1 out of 50 calls. And, you know, can you live with 1 out of every 50 calls? Is it worse than 1 out of every 100? Sure. But it's still not all that often.
Right. So, you know, The other thing they talked about was other phones having reception problems. Okay,
yes. A couple other phone companies
And everybody now is calling supposed bullshit, and I say that they're all a bunch of fucking liars because, look, I still remember 4 or 5 years ago when the first Motorola Razr came out. That fucking phone had really bad reception problems. Okay, bad. And it had to do with the – I don't know. They came up with a whole bunch of fucking explanations. At the end, they made some changes and made it work. It's one of the things that happens when you have – we don't have antennas like as before. I had cell phones, I remember, that had a little antenna that poked out.
Yeah.
Okay? I had a little antenna. My original handheld phones, I had one of the original really small phones that competed with the I had both the Motorola StarTAC. Okay, which had a little pop-out antenna, and the Nokia 232, which also had another antenna that you pulled out. We started moving away from those antennas, and I'm sorry, damn it. Those fucking things, when you're doing it in there, you're going to wind up affecting reception. There is no way around it.
Well, and again, this is the whole trade-off issue. I mean, people, you got better at reception with your big-ass external antenna, but people found it to be a pain in the ass. They broke off. You had to remember to extend them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
You know, and so they went first to the little nubby things.
And right, the little nub.
And then eventually completely internal. And, you know, it's much more convenient, but maybe it's not quite as good reception, and that makes sense. But they've compensated with software and other stuff and better radios. And so, you know, all in all, it's probably a win. But whenever you do something like that, you're making a conscious trade-off. And you get more of one thing or less of another or whatever. And, yeah, the bottom line seems to be, in this case, you know, and I'm seeing the tide turn in the coverage from, oh, my God, this is a horrible issue. The iPhone is ruined. Nobody's going to want one now to, okay, can we move on? Maybe yeah. It's not that.
Listen, I went on. Like I was going to mention, because I was in San Francisco. I went to the. Oops, what happened?
Oh no, I just realized, and I've done this before, but I just realized that once again I'd sort of left the microphone up on the shelf and was just talking instead of putting it in front of me.
No wonder you sounded weird. Okay, all right. Anyway,
I'm a dumbass. That's all there is to it. You know.
Okay.
So now I picked it up. If you heard like, that was me picking up the microphone and putting it down in front of me.
You know, I did go to the Apple store on Saturday because I was I had caved, and if they had any in stock, I was going to buy one. Sold out.
The four or the iPad?
Yeah, the four. Sold out.
Yep.
Sold
out. Yeah. They're running. I don't know about how they're managing in-store stocks, but the online ordering is running, you know, 3 weeks. Like, if you order one now, you'll get one in 3 to 4 weeks.
They said something about you could reserve one and you could get it at some point. Right. Yes. Right. So yeah. No phones. No iPads either. Actually, no. A shipment of iPads arrived as we were there, and my brother went and bought one, swooped one up right there. So. okay.
Regular
3G. As we're talking, and the guy's saying, oh no, we don't have any iPads, and somebody's just all of a sudden putting these behind the counter, and my brother points, so what's that over there? Oh, those just came in. Oh, okay, give me one. You know? So that was pretty much how we wound up acquiring one, but I didn't even try it. We brought in the box for the reason my brother lives in Texas, and he's very far away from any Apple retail store or anything. And so he decided we were in San Francisco to pick it up, and then he's going to take it home. So we didn't even take it out of the box to play with. So
how disappointing. Well, you mentioned that. Yeah, okay. The iPads apparently came in stock while you were there. iPhones are in limited supply at the moment. They still haven't been able to successfully ship the white ones, by the way, the iPhones.
It says here to ship in 3 weeks.
Yeah, Steve Jobs actually mentioned, I think, at the press conference this week that they're going to finally start shipping the white ones in quote-unquote limited quantities.
Okay.
But, you know, the thing is, this, I mean, as much as people are like, oh my God, no one's going to want one now. Once again, you have a situation where you know, there's more demand than there is supply, and Apple's working as hard as they can to keep up. I mean, some people bitch that, you know, they didn't properly anticipate demand or make enough, but, you know, come on.
Are you fucking kidding me? I sold 4 million of these fucking things in I don't know how many weeks, for crying out loud. I mean, how many of you think you wanted to make?
Well, one person did point out that, like, if you compared the stats from the first weekend to what Steve Jobs said, then, you know, it has slowed down a bit since the first week. But, you know.
They're still out of stock.
Yeah.
I mean, it may have slowed down a bit, but especially, well, you got to remember, you had all those pre-orders.
Right.
So that would naturally, to me, like, mean a slowdown. I mean, so I don't know.
Okay, well, let's take a break, and we'll move on to, I guess, something else. Let's tease the people.
Tease!
Yvonne went to an off-grid winery. We'll talk about that when we get back. Okay, here comes your exciting break. Okay, Vaughn, we're back. You mentioned when we were talking before the show that one of the things you, I guess in the last segment, you mentioned you were in San Francisco for a little while. But while you were there, you went off into the wine country and you visited a winery that is off the grid.
Yes, I was invited to a couple of we were invited to four different wineries, and we were going to be at events over a couple of days. And one of the ones we went is Schaefer Vineyards, which is there Vineyards. And we were invited there. We met the owner, Don Schaefer, there. The wine is famous because it is one of the first Cabernets that ever beat a French wine during an international competition, California wine. Okay. So the guy has a very big reputation in the business. When George Bush held his first state dinner inviting Vicente Fox, it's the wine that the White House served during the state dinner, for example, that they serve from their vineyards. So it is a pretty famous wine amongst wine, you know, people. And it is a very good wine also as well. I mean, I got to try it, but I think I had drank it before a while. But the one thing that was interesting is we were talking about the vineyard and how he had gone to sustainable agriculture, and not just sustainable in terms of you know, he showed us about water conservation, for example, how you see that in the valley, especially because trying to conserve water in the state of California, they don't irrigate anymore. There is this drip system that pretty much feeds the water directly to where it needs to be on every vine. Okay, you don't really see water being sprinkled all over. It's just right there. He's also got ponds that capture rainwater, okay, that he uses in order for the agriculture as well. But at the same time, he also has quite a substantially large solar panel grid that he built over the years that right now is big enough that it generates enough kilowatts to actually run the entire winery without having to depend on electric from the utility company. He's completely disconnected from the utility company, period.
Now, of course, part of that makes that possible is, I'm sure, that he has a decent amount of land compared to, you know, the area that's actually using the electricity.
But it's not as big as you would think. I mean, his fields are not enormous. I was surprised by the fact that it didn't seem to take up as much space as you would have thought. And he's telling me, if I understood correctly, he was generating 200 kilowatts of electricity a day. Yeah, that's right. Out of his grid, mm-hmm. That's pretty darn good. You know, but I thought that it was just kind of interesting how the guy over the years just went and, like, you know, he first started with the water conservation, then he moved to not using a certain number of pesticides, then he moved to collecting rainwater, and then he moved to basically just, you know, not having an electric bill anymore. He decided, the hell with it, I'm going to figure out a way how to generate electricity. And he finally did. And I'm like, you know, I thought that it was just, you know, I think it's kind of like, to me, what it, I think it shows that if you've got enough determination, I think that, you know, you certainly could, I mean, different way.
The thing with this kind of stuff is that there have been two major obstacles to sort of doing large-scale sort of alternative energy generation and off-grid stuff. One is the efficiencies of the technologies, which have been improving. And two mm-hmm. is the cost of the technologies, which have been improving. Right. You know, if you go back 10, 20, 30 years, you know, yeah, you could do solar power, but it was really expensive. There were maintenance costs associated too, because the panels were really brittle and, you know, sure. all kinds of issues. Yep. And then you had to have a very large area of these things in order to get enough power to do anything useful with. Yep. And then, of course, you know, it was highly dependent on the weather and all this kind of other stuff. The technology for all of these things has improved quite a bit. It's not perfect yet. There's a long way to go. But, you know, the technology for, like, storing up the energy you get when it's really sunny to use when it's cloudy, for instance, or nighttime, right. Has improved. The cost of these things have improved. The durability have improved. The efficiency, so for how much area you need for a certain amount of electricity, have improved. All of these things are getting better. And, you know, to some degree, it seems like it's just a question of time until the reliability, efficiency, affordability of these things gets to the point where it's practical for more common use. I mean, you can certainly envisage a place where, you know, if you extrapolate the technology out another 20 years, maybe you get to a situation where, you know, it makes more sense for every little house to have their own electricity generating system than sure. to get things off the grid. You
Why
know?
Not?
And, you know, that change, if that happens, would, of course, you know, fundamentally alter a lot of things about how we use energy. It'd be interesting to see, because, of course, the technology at power plants and such for distribution is also, you know, going to be improving in that same time frame. But there's a huge infrastructure cost to moving all this electricity all over the place.
That's right. And there's a lot of inefficiency in it as well. There's a lot of loss. When you generate, you know, kilowatts in one place and you have to transmit it over such distances, there's a lot of loss.
Well, and, you know, I saw an article just today or yesterday as well on a completely different kind of power, but some folks who've got some prototypes in the lab that for smaller consumption electrical products, you know, like LED flashlights and, you know, they're not quite up at the power of like a smartphone or something, but getting close, I think. Yeah, basically batteries that aren't really batteries, but the self-charge through motion.
Okay.
You know, so basically they made these things the size of a AA battery that basically just, you know, through essentially moving them, shaking them, that kind of things will recharge themselves. Cool. So for something that is that level of power, like a LED flashlight or something, you essentially have a permanent power source. I mean, it's not permanent. There's some loss, and eventually it'll wear out, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, effectively, you know, you get one of these things where, you know, every once in a while you just move it around and shake it a little bit, and you're good to go. And this is another thing where, you know, if you envision this technology improving further over the next 10 years, you know, imagine if your iPhone could charge itself simply by the motion of being in your pocket while you walk.
Now, that would be awesome.
You know?
Well, hell, I mean, I have a watch. It's an automatic. It works on motion.
Yeah, that's they've had mechanical watches that did this kind of thing for, you know,
100 years.
100 years, but they haven't had. You know, there have been various technologies that do create that do generate electricity through these sorts of random motions. They just haven't been enough to power the kind of devices that were in question. But that's just a question of, you know, decreasing power requirements for the devices, increasing efficiency in these technologies. It's only a matter of time. I mean, yeah, I swear, the biggest problem with my damn iPhone, aside from the fact that it's a couple years old and slow now compared to the new ones, is the damn battery life.
Yes.
You know, and having to remember to plug in and charge it, and like if I'm doing all kinds of stuff, it's not going to make it all day, you know. And so I have to remember I have a charger in my car, I have a charger at home, I have a charger in my desk at work, so I plug the damn thing in all the time. But if it just charged itself through like being in my pocket while I walk, hell yeah.
The reason I brought the stuff and to talk about this is just because I see so many people, they're such damn skeptics about the fact that we can actually reduce or greatly like have an effect on how much energy we use. And it's the biggest crock of shit. I mean, I was looking at a statistic that showed that we, as a nation, the United States, even with the increase of population in the last 10 years, expansion of the economy, that even with all the shit that's happened the last 2 years, the economy is still significantly larger than it was 10 years ago. We actually are using less energy, okay, than we did 10 years ago, okay? And I'm like, okay, if we manage to grow the economy, add population, do all this stuff while using less energy – and this is during a time period when people really were – you had a lot of government activity that wasn't really like trying to drive this. I think if we make a really concerted effort, I think that we can, you know, reduce our energy consumption in the long run. There are so many things to do. LED light bulbs, compact fluorescents, you know, more energy efficient vehicles, more efficient energy transmission, doing stuff in the house where everybody – I think that there are certain things in the home that if for every house, for example, we could probably power a number of things in the home without using fossil fuels. We can use solar electricity to probably power a number of things in the home. The panels aren't that efficient right now maybe to drive an entire house, but certainly enough to drive down consumption to a point where it could be cost effective at a time. Why wouldn't you like maybe heat your water or like do other things or whatever? You know, run your light bulbs and this and that and whatever in the house without using power from the grid. I mean, why the hell not? If you could.
One of the technologies along those lines that I thought was interesting, at least, is along the same idea of motion generating electricity. You can generate electricity through a plate that gets stepped on. And it just gives slightly when you step on it, and that little motion creates electricity. So people are talking about, you know, in places where there's either a lot of car traffic or a lot of pedestrian traffic.
There you go.
Put strips of this stuff on the ground, and every time somebody walks over it, it generates a little bit of electricity, not a huge amount, but a little bit, or somebody drives over it even. And you can use this to power, like, the streetlights and stuff.
Imagine that. I mean, wouldn't that be cool?
And the problem is, as with a lot of these technologies, is first of all, the technology isn't fully developed. It has a lot of issues that haven't been completely worked out yet because not a lot of people are doing it yet. And second, the startup cost is pretty high.
But you got to start somewhere. You know, I actually walk through – there's actually on the highway that I drive back and forth to the office, there are a number of electronic signs that display information that are right now – they're solar powered.
Yep.
Okay. They're solar powered. And I've never seen them not work, and I've seen it, whatever. They're solar powered.
Yeah, I've seen a bunch of those too. Those are getting pretty common at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, all right, so...
Anyway, time to take a break. It's time for your poem of the week. Enjoy the poem, and we'll be right back with a few other things up our sleeves. We'll be talking about the capping of the oil and maybe some other things. We'll see how time goes. We'll be right back.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by Notel Motel.
Break the nose, make it perfect, by Ariane Zwartes. Voluntarily ghosting ourselves, given our ability to graft or compartmentalize, to remove the fat around the yes, the fulcruming of flesh, the red swimming, the hyphen, the hem. So this is the adult disappointment. The roses run out of water and they die on the second day, insofar as needles become bees in the air, tongues to ribbons, ribbons to lungs, each of us becoming dragons, belching smoke and glaring, like the dog's hackles, we are eternally up. Words roll off and we can't seem to peel them back. Raise the table, crust of bread, salt and pepper, water glasses to the floor. Is it still a table? The cloth alone vaunts its emptiness? A shadow reaches farther than the thing itself. The way epiphany has come to mean a long-time comfort.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
I just thought I'd let Yvonne sing there for a little bit.
Oh, there you go. Yep. Okay.
Anyway, the oil spill, they capped it or something, but it may or may not be permanent. And what all is the story here, Yvonne? I gather they put the cap on. And the BP is saying, well, if it looks like it's holding, we'll just leave it there and we're good to go. We stopped it. The government's hedging a little bit and saying, well, we have to watch very carefully because one of the potential risks here is that by fully capping it in this way, pressure will build up in the area below the well and cause a leak somewhere else.
Correct. That's the concern right now. But that's still anyway, even though BP is doing this and capping it right now, it doesn't mean they know that the final solution to this, and I don't like using the final solution, the complete solution to this is to finish drilling the relief well. And they're still going ahead with that. But at least right now, as of this moment, it stopped. Okay?
Yep.
For now.
Which, I mean, you know, it still means there's a crap load to clean up, but it means at least there's not more coming out.
There's not more coming out. So at least finally, good news.
After like 2 months or whatever it was.
Close to 3 months.
Close
to 3 months. Took them to fucking cap the damn thing. But damn it, don't give them credit a little bit. They finally were able to do it. Jeez Christ. So, you know, at least, you know, I guess felt good about the fact that no more oil's going out.
Yeah, I don't know. At least in this place, you know, and for this time, and good, I guess, you know.
Just got to see the environmental damage, what the hell it is at the end. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I was reading some about it, and they're saying it could be catastrophic, but...
Well, and then again, the only thing you can do is look forward and say, okay, what if anything, has to change in the future?
Right.
And, you know, one possibility is, you know, hey, this is just a, you know, a cost of doing business. And if you're going to be doing this kind of oil drilling, you should expect something like this to happen at least once every 10, 15 years.
Well, I think that one of the things that there, I think from this, we can see that there are things that can be done.
Yeah.
Probably too.
Well, and I saw a few things that even compared to the rest of the industry, it does look like there were a number of areas where BP was cutting corners.
Yes, that seems to be, no matter how you slice it, it looks like they definitely had been cutting significant corners on their, on what they were doing. So, I don't know, you know, so yeah, we'll see, but at least right now, it stopped. It's good news.
It is good news.
So we got some good news.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know how much else there is to say about that. Good news about the oil for now.
For now.
So, okay, since we finished that off, I got a couple other things. I don't know if you have anything else. But and none of these are really big. I just wanted to mention them real quick. One, just as a follow-up to things I've mentioned in a few previous shows, I never successfully installed iOS 4 on my iPhone 3G.
Okay.
Every time it crashed. But once iOS 4.01 came out, it worked on the first try. And so I am now running iOS 4.01 on my iPhone 3G. Now, there had been some reports that, first of all, there are very few additional features for the iPhone 3G here. Most of the new features are available only for the iPhone 4 and for the 3GS in a lot of cases. But the 3G sort of gets left out in the cold because it's old. I think the only thing you really get is you can do the background thing. Like, who cares? Folders for your apps. Which,
right.
Okay, I can see. I personally, the way I manage my apps, I'm not using that. I won't use that, but I can see how some people would. And the addition of the ability to have a unified mailbox in the mail program, in addition to the ones for each individual account.
Well, that is a nice feature. Mailbox, maybe not the unified mailbox, but the ability to be able to switch from mailboxes far quicker than before. I really like that feature.
You know, I've actually been pissed off by it. Because
why?
Well, I'll tell you. First of all, I won't use the unified one because the main thing I use.
I don't use the unified one either.
Yeah, because the main thing I'm doing there is work versus personal, and I don't want those mixed. Sorry, thank you.
Correct.
But then within those, like if I'm in my mailbox for my personal account, let's say, very often what I'll want to do is I'll go on to look in one of my folders in my personal account, and so. Before, I would back out one and then hit the folder. Now, if I back out, I'm back at the list of all the inboxes, and I have to scroll down and find the other thing. So I'll get used to it, but so far, every time I've wanted to do something between accounts, I've actually gotten pissed off by that feature rather than appreciating it. Where it does help, and I will fully admit this, and this is probably the most common use case, which is, of course, why they did it, is if I'm going from the inbox of one account to the inbox of another account, they have taken a couple clicks out of that equation. But if you want to go from one folder to another within a single account, it's now more clicks than it used to be.
Well, let me check something here.
Well, unless...
Hold on. I'm going to check something.
Unless you go through the bottom.
Exactly. If you go through the accounts part, then you don't have to go...
But then you have to scroll all the way down to that to click it.
Oh, for no, the love of God. I'm sorry, but for most users, it is far more useful. That was a pain in my ass. They have to go all the way through the menus to then go back and drill down into every inbox.
I'll admit that my case is probably less common, and they've probably made the right choice. It still pissed me off. The one other thing, another obscure thing that only affects like a bizarre person like me, is with this is something in when they went to iPhone OS 3, they broke this, and I complained about it on my website, and they fixed it a couple revisions later, but it's apparently broken again. The way things work when you are doing a random shuffle of a playlist that includes both regular music and podcasts is not working properly anymore.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Oh, well. Jeez, you're breaking my heart.
Hey, you know, this is stuff I use every day. Now, I may be, you know, the one person in the entire world who does that, but, you know, still, you know, I...
Anyway.
Okay, so, and you know what? One thing that was interesting is, like, and I'll just do... You know, I have no idea, like, how that bug got fixed, but I imagine this was a fairly obscure bug. I did report it through the Apple bug system. I also blogged about it when it happened. And, you know, so maybe my little part had a part in reporting it. But I'll note something else that was interesting when working with a smaller company than Apple. And this was a couple months ago. I've been using Backblaze. For doing remote backups of my system, and it seems to be working okay. But you know, I was doing some stuff. I made a comment about it on my blog about something I had discovered about the way it works. Specifically, I found where they were storing certain information that I could pull off programmatically and make a graph and blah, blah, blah. But the point is, I posted about this on my blog, and within 12 hours, the CFO of the company responded to my post on my blog with some additional information.
Interesting.
And I'm like, you know, that's cool customer service right there. Now, of course, that only works with relatively small companies, but still, you know, it was like, you know, that's cool. I posted about something and, you know, someone at the company, whether it's like a CFO or whatever or not, but somebody at the company had their little Google alert set up, saw it, responded to it, gave personal feedback, added additional information. And, you know, that one thing by itself, yeah, there have been some things where it hasn't quite worked exactly the way I would think. And even right now, there's a little glitch that I'm like, that makes me think something weird's going on. But, like, it makes me feel better about the company and the product and more likely to continue using it rather than to shop around to other things, because they were actually responsive when I had an issue, you know?
I'm with you on that. Okay.
So, you know, good stuff. Okay. Let's take a break, our final break, and I just have a smorgasbord of like two or three things to mention, and then we'll wrap it up. So enjoy your break. We'll be right back.
Tag yourself with Blue Protection. La 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 la.
For the most accurate health information, visit www.cdc.gov or call 1-800-CDC-INFO 24/7.
Okay, we are back. So, okay, Yvonne, I'll give you a menu.
Give me a menu.
And,
okay.
And you can choose next time.
It's got to be a very good menu, because I got to admit that this weekend I was very fortunate to, at the restaurant I went to, but I did not know this before I went there.
Yes.
And I did not know this until after I ate the food. Look, I went and I got served some amazing food. I mean, just some stuff that I was just like, oh my God. I mean, this chef is a genius. And I'm like, oh my God. And I'm like, then I realized, I don't know if you know, for some of you may have heard or not, you know, Michelin publishes this travel guide, and they give stars to the best restaurants in the world, and not many of them have them. Well, this guy does have a Michelin star. And I got to tell you that now I realize why the heck it's a well-deserved thing. Oh my God. I was just, you know. So if you're going to give me a menu right now.
I'm not sure I'm going to be able to top that. You know,
And I didn't eat the.
What was your dish? Was it like?
Okay, the dish. I think I actually saved the menu because of it. It was actually the breakfast menu, and the reason why I complimented the guy was that you go to every damn hotel, and it could be super expensive, and you grab breakfast, scrambled eggs, the stupid omelet, this, blah 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 blah. No, he had this very original meals for breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Mount Washington Mounted Eggs. Okay, he took some kind of a homemade muffin that he did. It was a different twist on an Eggs Benedict, and he used a shaved ham underneath, and then he poached some eggs. And the way that they were poached, it's not as you expect that I've seen before served on an Eggs Benedict, with hollandaise sauce, with some other stuff, with some vegetables that he put on it. And it was just, I got to tell you, it's probably the most delicious breakfast I've ever eaten in my life. I mean, I was just, oh my gosh, this is just so good. So that was the one thing that really got me, the breakfast.
Okay, so now, before I give you my less appetizing than that menu, I will mention that as you were talking about your breakfast, a CNN breaking news alert came in saying testing of the BP well integrity detected a seep a distance from the well in the Gulf of Mexico. So it doesn't look like it's necessarily going to stay capped for long because it's causing leaks elsewhere. So we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. Okay,
here's my menu. Couple other things that we could talk about. And we've only got a few minutes left, so no big deal here. Gay marriage. It's been the recently Argentina passed a law allowing it. iChatter, which is the iPhone version of Chat Roulette, but we've never actually talked about Chat Roulette, so maybe that too. WikiLeaks. Taping police, like videotaping police. And the earthquake near D.C.
Let's go with WikiLeaks.
WikiLeaks. Okay. So...
For 500.
Yes. So basically, the what's going on here, there's a website called WikiLeaks. It's been around for a number of years. They specialize essentially in publishing whistleblower documents. Basically, you get people sending them stuff like if their company or even their government is doing something that they think, you know, is being kept secret that really should be public, people will send them documents, they will publish them. They've done a number of these things for exposing various things. The most recent and that has them and their founder in hot water is the tape that came out, I guess, a couple months ago now.
Yeah, it was the military one.
Yeah, the military one of the there's an American helicopter that opened fire on a bunch of people down below. That it turned out that these were not terrorists or whatever. There was a journalist. There were a bunch of innocent bystanders. They killed some children. They shot at the van who came and tried to provide medical help for the people who were injured. And anyway, it was a huge mess. But somebody in the military who had access to this tape leaked it to WikiLeaks and made it public. And then, of course, the hoopla about this incident became much, much more than it had been. The person who leaked it has now been, I guess, arrested.
Yep.
And is being held on charges of, you know, distributing classified information, etc. And they are also looking for the guy who runs WikiLeaks as a person of interest in this. And so, I mean,
I don't think they can do much. I don't think, given some of the other legal decisions regarding
like the Pentagon papers and such.
Yeah, they can't do anything to that person. However, they can do stuff to the leaker. I mean, you know. It is what it is. I mean, but certainly not to the. I think that's just bullshit that they can go after WikiLeaks for it. But you know,
well, and you know, this is one of those. Yeah, I understand the need for certain things to be secret, but I am also very, very wary of the fact that in many cases. Stuff is kept secret, not because of sort of what I would consider anyway, a legitimate reason, but basically to... embarrass people to make things look better, or, you know, in many cases, like, you know, because the public wouldn't approve. Well, you know, in a fucking democracy, if the public wouldn't approve, maybe you shouldn't be doing it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I am very mixed feelings about this, and I have a lot of sympathy for the leaker in this question in this thing here. You know, he's got this video. He feels like the government is covering this thing up, like a crime was committed here, something bad happened here. The government's covering it up, not wanting anybody to know, and so he puts it out there. And you know, it's not like it's going to have an immediate operational, like, you know, because this video went out there. Something very specific is going to happen. Now, it could, of course, change the overall mood and have people go after Americans more and things like that. So there certainly could be, you know, consequences to having stuff out there like this. But I have a lot of sympathy for this leaker here. I mean, having said that, you know, he's got to have known you know, what he was doing and the possible consequences of it. So
listen, there are times that you make a decision to leak something because you think it's right and not necessarily because of the consequences you might have.
Well, no,
it is
but
what
that,
it is.
That,
I mean, I
that's what I'm know. Saying is like in certain kinds of these situations, you know, the guy may say, you know, I know I will probably go to jail
right.
for this, but it's still
but
the
I,
right thing to
still
do.
Still the right thing to do. That's right. Yes.
You know?
And I got to agree with the guy. I mean, it is what it is. You got to stand up for what you believe.
Yeah. So, and I don't know. I mean, on the one hand, you could say, well, you know, you should, after these sort of judge by the results of the thing, and maybe the guy was right and let him off easy or whatever. And, but on the other hand, it's like, you know, if you're in that kind of situation, you got to do the trade-off. You got to understand the potential consequences of your actions. And if you think it's the right thing to do anyway, you got to live with those consequences.
That's right.
You
That's
know?
Absolutely right. So,
I don't know. And I, in general, I like the idea of a WikiLeaks type thing. I think it's an important resource to have. To some extent, it's like, you know, it's filling a void because the press isn't doing this kind of stuff anymore in the way they used to. You know, it used to be like, well, and maybe this still happens to some degree, but you would see the press very actively digging in and questioning and trying to dig up the dirt and show the stuff that, you know, the government or corporations or whoever is doing that they might not want you to know and all of that kind of stuff. It seems like the traditional press is a lot more timid about that kind of stuff than they used to be. And so you've got a hole here where, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if this WikiLeaks guy shopped around, not the WikiLeaks guy, but the leaker, if he shopped around to some regular sources first and didn't get a bite. Maybe he didn't, I don't know. But this does seem to fill a void where, you know, instead of calling up the New York Times and saying, hey, I got something, you throw it to someplace like this. And
right.
just get it published and get the raw material out there, and then people can make of it as they wish. And I think it's a very useful type of service. And I hope that whatever comes out of this brouhaha, you know, WikiLeaks or something like it survives and, you know, and continues to be able to do this kind of stuff. Because I think it's important that those kind of outlets are out there and that, you know, the whistleblower, I mean, if you're in an organization, whether it be a government or a company or whatever, and you find out that it's doing something that you feel is utterly wrong and immoral and people should know about it, there should be an outlet for you to, you know, make that information available and then for people to judge as they wish, you know.
I agreed.
Okay.
Okay.
So,
are we done? We're out?
We're done. You know, someday we should talk about chat roulette and stuff, because I think it would be amusing just to, you know, I don't want to do it, but yeah, have you get on chat roulette and you know, record your reactions as you see the penises come up, you know?
Okay, well, we'll talk about it next week.
So, anyway, I'm kind of teasing, but anyway.
Well, hey, well, I thought that isn't that the thing we're going to tease? Were we trying to tease the audience?
Yes, tease the audience. Yes.
Right. Okay.
Anyway, thanks for joining us. This has been Curmudgeon's Corner once again. Email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com if you have any questions, comments, thoughts, etc., etc., etc. And of course, tell your friends to listen to us too. And that's about it. Everybody, enjoy your week, and we'll talk to you again, you know, before too long. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Vaughn. See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.